The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the path that our practice offers, that Buddhism teaches, is often understood to be a path of wisdom. The very first piece of the Eightfold Path that the Buddha teaches, the path that we step onto in order to open our hearts and minds, is wise view. It is wisdom that kind of orients us in the direction of releasing suffering. This is the whole orientation of the wisdom in what the Buddha taught, is the possibility that we can be free from struggle, from suffering. And this struggle, suffering, doesn't mean being free from unpleasant experience, but it does mean that our minds can be at peace with whatever is happening. And at peace here doesn't mean without action. Peace can, with the qualities that come with the peaceful heart, we can and we do act. But instead of acting out of our habitual patterns, our habitual tendencies of greed, aversion, confusion, our hearts that have released, and that's one of the definitions of freedom, is the absence of greed, aversion, and delusion. And so a heart that isn't constricted with greed, aversion, and delusion tends to naturally respond with love, with compassion, with joy, with wisdom, with generosity, with patience. And so action comes from a completely different place. And these qualities of love, of compassion, of joy, and of equanimity are, those four in particular are a group of qualities of heart and mind that are called the Brahmaviharas. Brahmavihara means divine abode. And my understanding about these qualities is that they both are revealed as we engage in this practice of wisdom. And one way we can think about these qualities as being the emotional landscape of a heart that has let go of greed, aversion, and delusion. The emotional landscape of a heart that is not constricted. So the freedom that comes through this practice of wisdom opens to love, compassion, and joy, along with equanimity, balance of mind. And then also, it's not just that these qualities are kind of opened to as the heart lets go of greed, aversion, and delusion, but they are an active part of our path. Love, compassion, joy, qualities of the heart are a very fundamental and active part of our practice. In a way, one of the factors of the Eightfold Path, called wise effort, brings together love and wisdom in a beautiful way, because that teaching encourages us to let go of those qualities that constrict the heart, those qualities based in greed, aversion, and delusion. Encourages us to cultivate conditions where they won't be continuing to arise in our minds. And so there's both the side of, if with wise effort, the side of letting go of these qualities, these constricted qualities of heart and mind that tie up our hearts. And that work also creates the conditions for those qualities to not come so much in the future. So there's that side of the wise effort, the letting go of those qualities that constrict the heart. And that work, the letting go of the qualities that constrict the heart, I mean, because essentially the constriction of heart is kind of blocking the possibility for love, for compassion, for joy. That the very work to release those is a path towards the cultivation of those beautiful qualities. And then the other side of wise effort is the cultivation of and the encouragement of wholesome qualities of mind, beautiful qualities of mind. These include the basic definition of wholesome qualities of mind are qualities of mind that are based in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. And we could say that if we turn those into positive qualities instead of the absence of, non-greed is generosity. Non-aversion is love. And non-delusion is wisdom. And so we are cultivating qualities of wisdom, love, and generosity on the path as well. Recognizing them when they're present, cultivating their continuance, and encouraging them to come when they are not present. And so the path of practice through this wise effort and that joining of that wise effort with wise mindfulness both supports an active cultivation of the qualities of love, of joy, of compassion. And it cultivates the letting go of those things that are in the way of love, compassion, and joy. And so this is a terrain I'd like to explore a little bit, is essentially how love is intimately a part of this path of wisdom. There are some teachings that directly point to this integration. There's one teaching of kind of, it's kind of a series of steps that kind of takes us from the initial arising of a sense of confidence in the path of practice, confidence in the wisdom that we want to actually engage. We step onto the path with that confidence. We begin to actually explore some of these practices, explore some of these wisdom tools of meeting our minds, opening to, and some of the key practices are exploring and recognizing when these constricted qualities of heart are present, not to try to push them away because that's yet another constricted quality of heart, but rather to open to them with a quality of allowing, which is a non-constricted quality of heart, and allow there to be a kind of a natural unfolding, a natural orientation towards releasing those qualities, which is a natural process because our systems as organisms, as human organisms, as living organisms, I think, naturally have a tendency to gravitate towards well-being. This is built into our systems as human beings, is that that our systems want to orient towards well-being. And the way our human systems work is that orientation towards well-being is often very bound up with beliefs, ideas, agendas, concepts, views, opinions that are actually confused beliefs around where well-being will actually be found. And so without some kind of opening to what's actually going on in the present moment, our views, our beliefs, our agendas are going to be running the show about, well, this is where I'll find happiness. I'll find it from getting what I want. I'll find it from getting rid of what I don't want. And that just perpetuates the constriction. So we need a completely different path, and this is what the Buddha found in his own journey, his own questioning about, is it possible to be free from this mental reactivity around what is happening? Is peace possible in the heart, no matter what the conditions? And he found a completely different approach through opening to what is here. As we open to what's here, we open to greed, aversion, delusion, with an allowing attitude, which is already a flavor of love. This allowing attitude already has a flavor of love. With that perspective, what our hearts begin to see, what our organism begins to recognize, is that the states that have habitually motivated us, greed and aversion being the habitual motivators, and delusion right in there with them, as we begin to be aware of the experience in the present moment while greed and aversion are operating, we see, our system sees actually, our organism understands, oh, this is not the way to well-being. And so some of the delusion that's been obscuring our minds begins to be released, and our system begins orienting towards a completely different path, a completely different kind of well-being. And so this is stepping onto the path. We step onto the path through some confidence in this wisdom teaching. And in stepping onto this path, one of the descriptions of the unfolding of this path, the first steps, basically the first steps are bringing wisdom to our suffering, bringing wisdom, understanding this constriction of heart with some confidence or faith that the direction will support us. And the very next things that are said to naturally unfold as we step onto the path are delight and joy and calm and happiness. That this is understood to be the natural unfolding, that as we begin to, and part of how this happens, we open with that allowing awareness, open with an allowing attention to anger, for instance. And we see that allowing attention, a loving attention, we could say, a loving attention creates a completely different relationship to that state of mind and creates what our hearts begin to understand as a releasing. Even as we may, as we may recognize that anger is still there, as we are holding it in a loving attention, we begin to experience some degree of ease even as that anger is there. And that ease, coming from that understanding, brings a delight. Sometimes we even get to see the release of our constricted hearts, bringing a joy and a calm and a happiness. And so these kind of heart qualities, looking at that teaching on wise effort, this loving awareness loving mindfulness, loving attention, where we are exploring, allowing what is here to be here, neither rejecting it or agreeing with it, but instead exploring, well, what is this that's arising? Not looking at the content so much of, do I disagree or agree with all of the stuff that's going on around this feeling? It's the path of loving awareness has nothing to do with agreeing or disagreeing, but has to do with opening to this experience right now. And so that quality of loving awareness, of loving attention, incorporates right there all four of those wise efforts. Because as we bring a loving attention to something like anger, for instance, it creates the conditions. What happens there, as we bring that loving attention, there's a little bit of a decoupling. It's almost like, you know, we've been engaged with the pattern of anger, for instance, and the gears are going. We've got our foot on the accelerator and the gears are engaged, and we're, you know, before we bring wise attention to it, that's what's happening. The gears are engaged. The loving awareness may have a sense of a quality of disengaging the gears. And that recognition that the gears are disengaged, essentially, you know, what we recognize when we are like on the freeway in a car, using this analogy of the gears engaged, if we keep our foot on the accelerator with the gears engaged, the car is going to keep going faster and faster. When we take our foot off the accelerator, put the car in neutral, the gears are disengaged, the car begins to slow down and come to a stop. And this is what happens in our minds when we bring a loving attention to a pattern like anger, any pattern based in greed, aversion, delusion. When seen with loving awareness, the gears are disengaged, and so we are creating the conditions for it to be released. Well, the heart begins to let go of that pattern through a natural kind of releasing, a natural abandoning. We don't have to actively say, oh, bad state, stop. In fact, doing that is bringing aversion to that. And so it's kind of putting our foot on the brake and the accelerator at the same time. Disaster for a transmission. So the loving awareness brings the conditions for the diminishment, the weakening of what has arisen. And because of that, also, what, as I said a few minutes ago, you know, as we open to these states of mind, as we open to greed, aversion, delusion, the system deeply understands this is not the way to well-being. The heart recognizes this hurts. And so, again, this loving awareness creates the conditions for the heart to recognize this is not the way I want to go. This is not the way this organism kind of deeply wants to move. And so it also creates the conditions for less of that state to appear in the future. So that's one side of wise awareness that happens, wise effort that happens with this loving awareness. And the other side, cultivating the wholesome, maintaining the wholesome. Right there with loving awareness, we are cultivating both a kind of metta with the loving, allowing attention, and we are cultivating a wise mindfulness. Two very wholesome qualities that are being actively cultivated while we observe this difficult state. And so we are actively cultivating these wholesome states while we bring loving attention. And we are encouraging their cultivation. And so this practice of bringing wise attention in the present moment already includes a kind of love. And in fact, if we think about it, you know, as we start to see how greed, aversion, and delusion work in our hearts, we see they are blocking us from love. Not only from love kind of interpersonally, but loving ourselves. And so, metta, kind of this quality of love, is, it's really a very simple quality of kindness, of open-hearted connection, of non-constriction, kind of a very simple quality of connectedness that is cultivated to an extraordinary degree in our practice. It's not a kind of quality that demands something in return. There's a kind of a recognition of that quality that the heart can be connected even as it's not getting something from someone else. This is maybe the hardest piece for us around metta, the Pali word for love or loving kindness, is this opening to a heart that can feel connected without needing something back. This is a possibility for our hearts. Our human hearts have this capacity. And again, our beliefs, our views, our ideas have kind of gotten in the way of really opening to that kind of possibility of the heart that is just open to connection without needing something back. Our love has gotten tied up with bargains. I'll love you if you love me back. I'll do this for you if you do this for me. And so there's a little bit of a wall or a barrier there to that love. And it takes a courage to begin to open to a kind of connection that may not need something in return. Sometimes we think of, happiness, joy, as being a kind of a zero-sum game in terms of what we think of as happiness. And so it can be very difficult to not kind of either want something in return or in having a sense of connection with somebody, to not kind of secretly envy them when they have success. Or kind of another form of resistance to that connection when there is suffering, to not secretly separate or kind of have a feeling of pity, which is a kind of aversion to suffering. And so this open heart of love meets the world, and it will meet both suffering and joy. And a heart that is fully non-constricted will meet that suffering with a quality of compassion that doesn't include fear or pity or disdain, even. Sometimes we have disdain when somebody is suffering. Well, they must deserve it somehow. And it doesn't have envy or jealousy when somebody is meeting joy and delight or success. So this is that heart of love that is unconstricted. And that heart of love that is unconstricted also begins to meet our own suffering and our own joy, our own qualities of beauty, without feeling either, you know, I must deserve this, I'm a bad person, or I don't deserve this, or I'm the greatest because I do have these things and I must be the greatest person. Again, this quality of loving awareness begins to open us to a completely different perspective on our own hearts and our own capacity as human beings. So this quality of love, there are ways and a kind of ways to, on the path, as I said, it's kind of a natural unfolding on the path that this quality begins to show up. And there are active ways that it is cultivated. In fact, there's three basic ways, I think, to explore the cultivation in our practice of love. And the first might be the most direct. It is to explore active ways to cultivate this quality in our hearts. It is on the path. In one of the first aspect of the path is a wise view, and that view leads to intentions, how we engage on the path. And those intentions include the intention of love, the intention of non-aversion, non-cruelty, non-ill will. And so right there, there's the intention towards cultivating both the absence of the things that get in the way and the wholesome quality itself. And so we can practice with an active cultivation of love. And there are meditation tools, meditation technologies that support this. I won't go into this too much at this point, because this could take several weeks to describe the practice of loving kindness. I did a day long on it a few weeks ago. You basically kind of orient the heart towards the intention of kindness through expressing wishes of well-being to yourself and others. Those wishes, those kind of thoughts, it's using thoughts to orient our intentions in a particular direction. That's this form of practice actually uses thoughts, uses reflection in the mind that are connected with this quality of love that begin to orient our heart in that direction. So thoughts of, may I be happy, may I be safe, may I be well, may I live with ease. May you be happy, may you be safe, may you be well, may you live with ease. May all beings be happy, well, safe, live at ease. So this is a kind of an orientation through bringing thoughts into mind. You may not be feeling that feeling, but what this is doing is kind of planting seeds for that quality, nourishing those seeds through continuing to orient the heart in that way. And what this practice also does, paradoxically, maybe not so paradoxically, one of my teachers for the metta practice described the practice being like running a metta magnet over your heart. You know, you have a metta magnet, and what do magnets do? They pull their opposite. And so, you know, you're running this metta magnet over your heart, and what happens is all the things that are not metta kind of get pulled out. So it begins to bring to the surface those things that are in the way of metta. This isn't a mistake. If you practice or play with this technique or tool of orienting, even for a few minutes a day, sometimes I practice this while I'm in the grocery store or driving, you know, just... Actually, at one point I decided that going into the Safeway would be my metta monastery. I would go in, and it actually was supported at that time. Some number of years ago, Safeway seemed to have this policy where all of the employees smiled, made eye contact with you, and said, I hope you're having a good day, or have a good day, or something like that. And so, you know, there was a kind of a a kind of a encouragement to be in that space. And boy, you know, I found as I went through the grocery store, just wishing every being that I saw there well, I felt, you know, so much, first of all, how much suffering is happening in grocery stores. You know, people are pretty stressed, especially moms with their kids. You know, people are busy, they're tired, they're ready to get home, you know, so it just felt to me so heart-opening to connect with, you know, humanity in the grocery store. And it was a great, you know, tool for supporting this part, both for being aware in an everyday activity and in orienting my mind towards love. You know, the driving on the freeway, another great place for this. You know, instead of having resentment for that person that's trying to merge in front of you, oh, may you be happy. May you get to where you're going with ease. You know, this is an act of love and kindness and generosity. And so exploring this possibility in our daily lives. And so these are some of the active practices of love. That's one way to cultivate these qualities of heart, and these practices of active cultivation of the Brahmaviharas, all four of these wholesome qualities of mind, are shot through the Buddhist teachings. And then another way to begin to explore cultivating the wholesome states is to, again, you know, recognize what gets in their way. As we talked about around, like, noticing the constriction, noticing aversion, noticing greed and confusion, and how that constricts the heart, how it is not in the direction of well-being. This actually does create the conditions for the further cultivation of well-being, both because we are bringing the loving attention to it, cultivating, and that's in a way cultivating the quality of love directly. That orientation to, can this be allowed? This too, can this be allowed? Sometimes we might use that reflection in our mindfulness practice. This too, can this be allowed? And recognizing, kind of consciously recognizing that that allowing is a form of connection and love to our own experience, to our own selves. In some ways, this practice of mindfulness, of loving attention, of connection to what is actually going on in our hearts and minds, is one of the most loving things that we can do for ourselves. What do we think about? I know for myself, when I think about wanting to be loved, I think about somebody who's willing to accept me fully as I am, willing to see me, able to see me for who I am without rejecting any part, no part left out. That's a tall order for another human being. It's a tall order for ourselves towards ourselves, and yet it is way more possible. I mean, that is where we have some measure of agency in our own hearts and minds. This practice of loving awareness is essentially a practice of seeing ourselves as we are, no part left out, fully opening to ourselves, seeing ourselves as we are, not rejecting anything. Again, this kind of interesting piece of neither rejecting nor buying into what's coming up, but opening to it, seeing it fully. We are essentially exploring what it means to, you know, love ourselves through this practice. And then another way that this practice of loving awareness brings in love or cultivates love is that, you know, as I explore my own mind more and more, I understand our suffering, our struggles, as being a kind of a mixture, a kind of an entanglement of kind of the deep wish we have for well-being. This is a very natural part of ourselves as human beings, this wish to be happy, to be healthy, to be safe, to be at ease. That's a deep wish in our hearts. And that wish itself is metta. And that side of ourselves that deeply wishes to be happy and safe and healthy basically mixes it up with the truth of life in this world, which is impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. And those two kind of get tangled up into knots. And that's where our suffering is in the entanglement of the truth, impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. So much of our experience is that when we are suffering, we are meeting this truth of uncontrollability, unreliability, impermanence. And it is probably mixed up with some form of, but I want to be safe, but I want to be happy, but I want to be at ease. But it's not possible because it's uncontrollable, it's unreliable, it's impermanent. And so there's a tangle here, a tangle between those two. The tangle is delusion. The belief essentially, I mean, that the delusion here in this tangle is that these two can't coexist simultaneously. That either one or the other has to go, that either one or the other must be wrong. Either it's fundamentally a flaw with me that I can't control experience, that I can't make experience reliable, that I can't make my experience permanent. That must be something wrong with me, or else there's a fundamental flaw with somebody else who's making it not possible for things to be controllable, reliable, or the universe. Maybe we feel like the universe is at fault. And so there's that side of it, you know, if I'm not able to be happy, I'm not able to fulfill this deeper wish of happiness because of what I understand to be the problem, that it's impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, then there must be something wrong with me or something wrong with somebody else or something wrong with the world. Or we might feel like, well, if that's the truth, and this I see happening with people as they step onto the path, as they begin to understand some of the truths of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, it's like they use that as a dharma bludgeon to that those tender feelings of love, of deep wishes for well-being and happiness. It's like, well, it's impermanent, so I shouldn't want to be safe. It's unreliable, so I shouldn't want to be happy. And what the delusion is that, you know, the belief that these two can't coexist simultaneously, that we're trying either to figure out how not to want to be happy or how to solidify, figure out how to make reality different than it is. So we're fighting between these two. They're tangled. These two are tangled. And so our suffering is composed of a tangle of delusion with the threads of love and wisdom, of love and truth. And as we open with loving awareness, also which contains both love and wisdom, it begins to expose that delusion and reveal the truth and the love that are embedded in that tangle. Use this tangle analogy. It's like if we're trying to have the idea that what I need to do with this suffering, this struggle, this anger at the world, because I'm not not able to make myself feel safe, anger at the uncontrollability of the world. If we feel at some level like, well, the anger, we see how painful the anger is. And so some part of us wants to get rid of that anger. And we kind of might feel like, well, the solution is to take scissors and cut that knot out. But that knot, that tangle, is not only composed of anger. It's composed of love and wisdom. It's composed of truth and love, just tangled. And what's called for is that loving awareness that which begins to untangle the tangle. It begins to untie the knots. And then what we see as those tangles become untangled is both the kind of deeper wish for well-being in that tangle, and the truths that have tangled it up, that we have gotten entangled with. And so as we orient with loving attention to states of mind like depression or anger or fear, not resisting them, not buying into them, what can be revealed in there is not only something about the truth of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, but something about that deep wish for well-being. So many times in my practices, I've been opening to something that I felt like was just a fundamental flaw in myself, something wrong with me, a depression or a fear or an anger. As I was patient and held it with a loving awareness, what was revealed underneath was love. Was compassion, and sometimes even joy, along with the deeper understanding of how the heart can hold both love and wisdom, can hold both these truths, impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, and this deep wish for well-being. And so as we practice with loving awareness, not only are we cultivating the love of the loving awareness itself, but that loving awareness is beginning to untangle love that's been bound up in greed, aversion, and delusion. And that begins to be experienced and felt too. This is why I think that in another expression of the path, there's a teaching that talks about our first step is really to understand all of our struggles. And when we're at, you know, as we begin to understand all of our struggles, then a sense of confidence in the path of practice. And you know, so the understanding here, understanding being bringing loving awareness to our struggles. As we bring that loving awareness to our struggles, we gain confidence that this is the way to well-being. There's a kind of a direct resonance of our being with this path. And that the next step on this path, this other description of how the path unfolds, is that as that confidence grows and as we understand our struggles of mind, there's a natural arising of love, of compassion, of joy, and equanimity. And my understanding of that natural arising is that that is the love that has kind of been knotted up in all of that suffering. It's released and able to be felt and experienced. And so the practice itself, the mindfulness, and you know, again, it is already, it's a kind attention, a loving attention. Cultivates love. And then we can also recognize another way towards this cultivation of these qualities in the wise efforts it talks about. Cultivate wholesome states that have not yet arisen and maintain wholesome states that have arisen. Cultivate wholesome states that have not arisen, that's in the terrain of those active processes, active practices of metta that I talked about before, using the intention. cultivating or maintaining wholesome states that have arisen, one of the best ways I know to do that is to bring loving awareness to them. And so recognizing when connection, when love, when joy arises, bringing some attention to that. Sometimes we might get kind of just kind of absorbed in it, kind of take it for granted or something, or just kind of get lost in it. But the loving attention brings an appreciation for the quality. And again, we see in being mindful of it, our system recognizes, oh yes, this is the pathway, the path towards well-being. So those are some thoughts on love and wisdom, and I'd like to open it to your thoughts on this topic. Yeah.
What occurred to me when you were talking was that schadenfreude is sort of the flip side of envy. When you have pleasure in someone's misfortunes, it's something that relieves the pain of envy but does not dismantle the false assumptions behind envy. And so it just becomes a cycle which actually encourages envy in a way.
Yes.
So that was something.
Well, and again, it's that schadenfreude, taking delight in somebody else's misfortune, is, you know, we can feel the constriction of the heart in there already too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. There's a sort of opposite constrictions in envy and schadenfreude, and they sort of feed each other like a cycle.
Well, in a way, I would say that the constrictions have to do with whether the attention is more on other or on self.
Right, yeah.
You know,
right.
And they're just flip sides of a coin.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was doing that. The other thing, if you add envy to the list of three vices, envy, greed, aversion, and delusion, you have the acronym EGAD. So.
Thank you. Yeah.
This really helped because I was struggling with that this week, and it all was kind of just coming together last night and this morning. My mother had a fall. She's 89. She had a fall last week. She had elbow surgery this morning for a number of reasons. I couldn't be there last week and today. And I'd been feeling a mounting anxiety, and I didn't know why. And it just really occurred to me that it's that same conflict. My whole being of love wants to be with her. You know, that's the impulse.
Yes.
There's personal need, but it's just a natural impulse too.
Yes. Yeah.
And for a variety of reasons, partly her wish, that isn't how it is.
Yes. And so there's some of it that's uncontrollable.
I can't control this impermanence. And
yes.
She's 89 and this is her first fall, and you know, I'm preparing myself for this, and so to see that I can open up both to my own anxiety with loving awareness.
Yes.
And just be with that.
And recognize that it is that mixture of the deep love and the wish it were not true that it were impermanent and unreliable.
Right. Or that I could be there so I have a feeling of control and connection,
yes.
Which brings me peace, but doesn't control anything really. So it, and to love and have compassion for her and who she is and how she's wanting to go through this part of her life, and just understand that and respect that.
Yeah. And see if there's a possibility of not shutting down the love.
Exactly.
That's the danger, I think, in some of those states. It's like that it's like, because the mixture of love is in there, you know, it's like, oh, maybe I cannot love that or not want to do that. And, you know, not wanting is a form of affirmation.
Right, I think that's what was creating the unconscious anxiety, was that I was like, well, okay, just let it be. And I wasn't really acknowledging.
Yes. That's Dharma bludgeon. That's essentially that Dharma bludgeon. Oh, yes, right. Things as they are.
Right.
Wait a minute. Exactly.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else have any?
Hi, this talk was so just for me, nobody else. It touched me in many points. I was laid off in the beginning of June, and like my life just kind of, all the pieces were to there. And then suddenly, a lot of lights coming about, and what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. I got so lost. But before that, I had some sort of thing when I was driving to work, people just going on me and saying, well, maybe his mother's dying or something, let mm-hmm. him go, but pray for you. And then suddenly I see everything around, everything we have around. A lot of people did this. A lot of people helped to build.
Yes.
A lot of people died doing
yes.
it.
Yes.
A lot of people have a lot of passion at work, doing whatever they want. You know, and having pleasure. And then suddenly on the street, if you drug addict people, I say, everybody had their choices in life, and they are here, like I am. We're all the same.
Yes.
We're all the same, you know? And then suddenly, there's another thought. That's all you said.
Yeah, that place of recognizing our own humanity
yeah.
and the humanity of others, it opens us so much to compassion.
Yeah.
And to joy, both, because as you said, I mean, sometimes I've been walking through the grocery store and I'm kind of like, wow, you know, all of this food has been brought here by people.
That's right.
So that I can buy it. So that, and so just kind of the feeling of being supported, not just me, but, you know, that the feeling of how much we support each other can come in.
Yeah, just sit at home. You look in your kitchen. You look at the plate you made. You look at the people that plant those things.
Yes.
You people, well, the sun is there. It's a lot of stuff.
That's a beautiful reflection, actually.
It's unbelievable.
It's a beautiful reflection.
Every day I have the same thing, you know, and yet I am in such a pain that I cannot organize my day with priorities. Like everything's still too bubbling. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to try to...
Yeah, and again, you know, when you find that kind of bubbling and anxiety, you know, maybe some loving attention for that.
Lay back.
Yeah, not to fight the anxiety, but... Oh, and recognizing too that opens us, the recognition of the anxiety that is arising here. It's like, well, this is a human experience.
Yes.
It's not just about me. And how much suffering is in the world because of the way we habitually respond.
I think this, my layoff, would bring me to the age I am now, because I thought until May that I was 26 years old. And the whole body was acting like 26 years old, you know, full of action. And then suddenly, arthritis, bursitis, this and that and that and that and that. My fitness, yoga and whatever, Pilates and all the stuff I do, it's kind of, what can I do, because it's going to be in pain right there. You have to recognize this again, do some physical therapy and see your limits. It is so hard.
Yes,
acknowledging it's like learning how to walk again.
Yes,
you know, and just I have to redesign my life to this moment of the third what we have mm-hmm. first and second and third, right? What is
third act?
The final act. So I'm doing my will. I'm signing up for the summary of health and. With Kaiser, in the end, they have what you want to do when you die. What do you want to do? You have a funeral, memorial, what kind of song you want.
Yes.
So kind of going all to this. Oh, my God.
So acknowledging the truth of our own mortality, essentially.
Yes.
and we need to stop.
Oh, so, thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.